Where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Hello and welcome, Ducks fans. Where and whenever you're watching or listening, this is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never-before-heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. As always, I'm your host, Nick Cody, former Oregon Duck offensive lineman. With me, my co-host, Samuel Tidrick-Smith. You can find us at Nick R. Cody and at Samuel101TS on Twitter. Let us know with a follow and make sure you're following at Once a Duck. Make sure you like, subscribe, following, because, man, we have another great interview for you this week. I'm excited for it, Sam. After a game like that late night Stanford game, it sure feels refreshing that we can come off with a secure win, that we have plenty to talk about in terms of improvement, but got to feel really, really confident with coming away with a Pac-12 after dark victory with that secure of a first half.
Nick, when we were recording this podcast last week, if you would have told me, hey, Oregon's going to have double-digit penalties in the first half, be playing Stanford late night, I wouldn't have thought it would have gone as well as it did. I wouldn't have thought Oregon would have a near 30-point advantage at halftime. But that's absolutely what we saw. And it was an impressive display on one hand, a lot to clean up. We're going to get into that. But it was really, really good to see this Oregon team do exactly what they were supposed to do, and that was take care of the Stanford team.
Yeah, and we both had very, very different perspectives on that game. Me being there in person, you watching from home, and well, let's use that for our lightning yellow round this week. I'll start. Clock goes right now. Got to go down there for the Oregon Athlete Foundation alumni tailgate, see a bunch of great alumni and friends. And man, the tailgate before, not only there, but being able to rock over to our good friend T-Rod at Autzen Zoo member, man, it was a fantastic time. Glad I got to see everybody there. And man, beautiful, beautiful day in Eugene, Oregon. October in the 80s, I'll take it.
Shout out to T-Rod. He's always the best whenever either one of us are coming through. He's always very welcoming, and I appreciate that. Nick, I was watching college football all day. This was the first game in Autzen Stadium that I personally hadn't attended since the 2016 season. It had been a stretch. It had been a while, but I'll tell you, that was as good a performance as I could have hoped to have seen. Sitting there, being able to watch it, being able to take in the FS1 broadcast, a lot of good, a lot of bad, but overall, I was very impressed with what we were able to see on the field that night.
Yeah, I was really impressed by the way they took care of the alumni this week. You get to see my new fancy hat here and possibly be able to give this away at some point this season if you guys like it too. But got to get on the field before the game. That's always really, really special, getting to see the duck roll by on the motorcycle, the entire team come out. And the excitement and the energy in Autzen Stadium was at its peak. The students were back. It was loud, it was exciting, and I had one of the best views right there until I had to go up to my row 81 seat. Athletic department helped me out on that one of these days, but yeah, able to go sit with Mike after a little bit, but when I first got to my seats after being from the field, I thought they were trying to test my conditioning again.
Oh man, I can imagine. So that's 80 rows, that's at least 160 steps right there. You know, that's a lot of fun to deal with. Nick, I'll tell you something, and it's something that I haven't seen in a while, as I mentioned, and it's how an Oregon home uniform looks on TV. And my goodness, did they look as good in person? Because that looked fantastic. I love the apple green and yellow. That absolutely popped off the screen. And every single time any one of the players got the wheels turning, specifically one quarterback who may have run for a whole lot of yards in that ball game, it looked real good running down the field.
Well, that's the end of our lightning yellow round, but a great point to end on is you always look fast in the yellow pants because it's easy to unload weight quickly, if you know what I'm talking about. Those guys that understand what it's like to have to go to the bathroom on the field, I've been there. I've done that. It's the only thing. It's the only good thing the yellow pants are for, and you can't pull that off with the uniforms we're wearing down with the Wildcats this week. It's not going to look good with the eggshells.
No, it would. It probably wouldn't work quite as well. I'll give you credit for that. But come on, Nick. There's a green tent for a reason. What are you doing? What are you doing, you animal?
Hey, I forget these things. We didn't have these kind of luxuries back in my day. You had to hope you had the right color combination or were just sweaty enough to pull it off. So, hey, well, most of the time that second factor I was already set on. But we did look fast in the yellow pants. And, I mean, that's kind of, you know, standard Oregon. But to still do it, you know, late into midnight, basically, it was impressive to see this team mostly, for the most part, even in the second half, continue to try and execute, continue to look fast at positions, even with a couple of mistakes and miscommunications.
Well, Nick, as we do weekly, we have to jump into our players from that ball game. I know I would love to hear yours. I'm going to obviously give you mine. And I think that we probably both have the same player at the top of our list, just because when was the last time we saw an Oregon player pass for over 160 and run for over 140 in the same ball game, two touchdowns on each account? Incredible stuff from Bo Nix this past weekend.
Just incredible. And the energy on that 80-yard run, man, that was special. That's one of those ones that the only thing I really remember is Dennis Dixon up the hash for my very, very first game against Houston, being there live. There was nothing I remember quite like it, because as soon as he took off, it felt like the entire stadium kind of knew that he was gone. Saw him almost get a little caught at the end there, though. Going to learn that from the tape. But man, incredible day for Bo. Really excited to see him, and guy on the defensive side of the ball, obviously got to start with Brandon Dorlus, getting to the quarterback, getting there, just absolutely maddening, but not, you know, one of many defensive guys that had a great performance, but the guy that obviously stood out being there in the stadium, hearing his name called, getting to see him celebrate after some big plays.
Well, Brandon Dorlus, as you said, 5 tackles, 4 solo, 3 for loss, 2 sacks. That's worthy of that Defensive Lineman of the Week award. I think that's, what, the second one he's earned so far this season? Is it the third, maybe? He's played really, really well and has definitely earned that. And a guy on the defensive end that I have to give credit to, this was brought to my attention. I noticed it. I noticed he was in on the action, but it was brought to my attention. Hey, shout this guy out. It's Brian Addison. Brian Addison's had moments this season. He's also had some moments that haven't been ideal at all, but 8 tackles, 6 of them solo. This is a guy who looks completely different than he did week 1, from a guy who didn't look like he wanted contact to someone who was in on the most of it this past weekend. Was super impressed with his effort, was super impressed with what he brought to the table.
Guy that we're, again, talking about week to week, and it's great to see the consistency, Troy Franklin. I mean, the professional two-toe tap inbounds right there in the end zone. You know, no doubts. You know, a good foot long part of the screen there on the mighty Oregon screen on that side. You could tell he was in the end zone inbounds right there. That was an impressive play. What an impressive player. It's been great to see him have a breakout season this year.
Well, Troy Franklin, we talk about it every week, but it's because we should be talking about it every week. 4 catches, 52 yards, and that incredible touchdown. It was going around Twitter all throughout the evening. Definitely the best Oregon touchdown catch we've seen since Jalen Redden, that Washington game back in 2018. And for sure the best pro two-toe tap we've seen since. You know who I'm going to say? Braylon Addison, 2013, Oregon State. Just an incredible play. You know, when you're being included into those kind of plays, you did something incredible. He absolutely did in that game. And another receiver I want to shout out, Chase Cota, able to get his first touchdown as a Duck, had that huge 49-yard screen and run there at the end of the first quarter. He said it in the post game after the game, it felt special running into the end zone, walking back to the sideline, and immediately coming home Oregon playing right afterwards. A fitting moment, a perfect moment for a guy who has absolutely earned it, and I'm so glad to see him thriving in this Oregon system.
Well, and the guys really that, you know, got to talk about, 5 is one that really made that play happen on the tunnel screen, is the offensive lineman getting out there and working. And I love, even with Jones out, moving Walk over to right guard and having, you know, Sala playing the way he is, you know, when he's focused, locked in, not getting penalties, he is a force. I mean, absolutely on the one of those long Bo runs, he pulls around and is just leading. And I mean, nothing. If Bo just wanted to slow down for a second and follow that big man for a couple more, he could have gone to the end zone on that play too, because he was trucking DBs or anyone getting in his way out there, moving like you don't see a lot of guys solid size moving. Forsyth, the consistent guy in the middle, making the right calls. And to be honest, most impressive, even more than TJ Bass getting the offensive lineman of the week, is Marcus Harper being able to step up with his level of experience and almost seamlessly take over that left guard spot. It's been amazing to see those two work in tandem. And even when they rotate in a guy like Jackson Powers Johnson or Josh Connerly out there, the offense doesn't seem to miss a beat. I know it looked like Coach Clem was pretty frustrated with them for a little bit there. But I think, you know, they cleaned it up. And even then, this offensive line just really impressed me. And that's a unit that's had to be impressive this year for us to find success.
Another guy I'm going to mention quickly is Ferguson. Terrence Ferguson came out, 2 catches for 16 yards. That is what it is. But what he did blocking throughout the night was what I found so impressive. Blocking on run plays, blocking down the field. And let's not forget, he had just enough. He clipped just enough of the defender on that long 80-yard Bo Nix run to keep Bo clean. If it wasn't for Ferguson getting way out in front like that and being able to nudge him off his path just enough, that's not a touchdown for Bo Nix. It's not the play that it is. Love to see that out of him. Love to see this tight end unit continuing to work so well every week. And then, I mean, the last player I'm going to mention, and it's a guy that we both knew we were going to get to, Bucky Irving.
Yeah. Well, absolutely fantastic day from Bucky Irving. You see him, you know, like he says in interviews, you know, it's all about not letting the first guy get you down. Well, he does a lot more than that and will change on a dime across the field. Another guy that we got to definitely shout out and another standout for this team, but hasn't quite gotten as many highlight plays as we might expect. Also picking up the football on a dime, Noah Sewell. Man, if we didn't have such a stacked backfield right now, I'd say, coach, put him back there for a couple carries. That was impressive running right there, and he even got out of bounds. I mean, if he wanted to ruin somebody's day, he could have probably taken it to the house.
As always, impressive stuff from Noah Sewell. So glad to see him popping up on the stat sheet more and more as the season progresses. As you mentioned, he had the fumble recovery. He also had a quarterback hurry in this game. 5 tackles, 2 solo. Not a ton of players were able to rack up crazy numbers in this game because there was so much in and out, rotation amongst all of these players, but really good work across the board. Obviously, as we all know, penalties have to be cleaned up. You can't have double-digit penalties in the first half. Regardless of whether or not we think every single one was justified, enough were that you set that standard, and then they're going to be watching you extra close. Oregon's got to be able to clean that up. Coach Lanning said as much in the post game. He said it was concerning. It's something we have to work on. It's something we're going to work on. I'm very excited to see how that works playing out moving forward. But this Stanford game, Oregon, they played just about as well as you could hope, considering the penalties, considering those type of things. Was very glad to see this game out of these players.
Yeah, and again, you know, those penalties – I agree. You know, when there's that many, you can't just put it on the referees. There's some discipline issues. And at least what we've heard from players this week is that if you're getting a procedural penalty in practice, man, you're getting replaced by somebody for a second. You're doing some up downs and then you're getting right back out there. And I love that attitude. I know, I believe either Coach Pilotti or Coach Kelly implemented that for a bit at times when we've had some penalty issues. And up downs are a hell of a motivator, my friend. That and just having to roll around during practice, those two punishments were awful, embarrassing, and just drained you physically. Well, at least for a short period of time. Then you'd get back to practice and energy would come back pretty quick. But those were the two kind of things they could definitely do if they were like, we want to make sure you aren't going to sustain injury, but you're going to put in your penance for your penalties. So I think that's one of those things that it's exciting to hear with such a young and new coaching staff that they are not just letting slip, letting get by because we got to win. And I mean, a lot of coaches, you look at 31-3 in the first half. I mean, there's a lot to be happy about, but Coach Lanning doesn't sound particularly happy. And he's continued to reinforce that each week it's Oregon versus Oregon. And, you know, kind of reminds me of the old win the day back in the day and the old faceless opponent, because you're starting to hear these players echo the same thing more and more. And that means that the culture is really starting to build in Eugene, Oregon.
And that's the culture is exactly what we want to build. It's the thing we need to work on. And there's culturally, there's something that I loved from this Oregon game. There's something that brought me so much joy. And it's the first four Stanford drives of this ball game, the first four drives all ended in punts. No drive was longer than, I believe it was 6 or 8 plays. And that was only on the second drive. And for a 6 or 8 play drive to only give up 22 yards is impressive stuff. That means it was getting to third down often. That first drive for Stanford, -1 yard. They had to punt on 4th and 11. Next drive, punt after only moving the ball about 22 yards. Then they move it, 3 plays, only get 9, punt again after that, field goal after that, and that takes them all the way to halftime. That defense showed up, showed out. They were so aggressive, so physical, so ready to play in this ball game. Tanner McKean never had a moment to feel comfortable. There are quarterback hurries all up and down the stat sheet, sacks all up and down the stat sheet, where there are obviously places you want to see improvement. There are also plays where you go back and watch the film. And tell me the last time you saw this, Nick, every single Oregon defensive lineman won their rep. Every single one. There was a particular sack Brandon Dorlus had on Tanner McKee, where if you look at the tape, everyone wins right there. Mace Funa wins. Dorlus wins. You see Riley win. You see several other players that are in that front seven, in that box, who are just manhandling the Stanford offensive linemen. That's something that I know I haven't witnessed often, if at all, as a Duck fan. Such impressive stuff from that group, especially against this Stanford team. They've given up a lot of sacks this year, but in general, to do this kind of work against a Stanford team is impressive.
Well, I think we've actually seen glimpses of it because, you know, these guys, and especially in the spring, we saw they have the twitch. They have the initial get off. When they're all on top of their schemes, they know what their assignment is in that scheme, especially if there's any kind of stunt. These guys definitely have the ability. Now you're able to see these guys' comfort of using whatever that first or that counter move is and getting off the ball with that same speed with that move in mind already. I mean, that's a huge thing for the defensive lineman. It's such a reactionary position. You can't sit there and think about if the offensive lineman is replacing his hand, what your next go-to is going to be. It has to be built in, and you're starting to see, especially with Dorlus, that he's getting into with each game rep and each game, he's getting more and more just settled in with being able to throw that move. And even when it doesn't work, sometimes he can just outpower his opponent when the first move doesn't work or there's not a counter move there. So the entire defensive line, I think we've seen moments, but Stanford was especially a glimpse for it, because even though McKee is a good quarterback, it's not an offense where you're going to be able to get the ball out quickly. They usually rely on trying to set up the rushing game, which we held to under 130 yards. And whenever you do that to a Stanford offense, it's going to definitely put that quarterback in a situation where he's going to have to either move the pocket with his feet or he's going to be in a lot of trouble.
Well, one more guy, we didn't mention him in our players of the game. His numbers aren't jumping off the screen, but it was impressive to see how he came in and did his work. And that's DJ Johnson. He missed the first half of that game following the suspension from the Washington State targeting call. But in the third quarter, he really didn't play much of the fourth. In that third quarter, 3 tackles, 1 solo, as well as a sack and a tackle for loss. I thought it was really impressive to see him come in cold, be able to produce the way he did, but I'd love to hear your perspective being there, seeing him come in, see what he was able to do and how productive he was.
Oh, and absolutely, he's a physical specimen, and now being able to focus on one side of the ball and come out in the second half, I mean, that's a nightmare for an opposing offensive lineman. And he had to just be kind of, frothing at the mouth to get out there with the game and the situation it was, and knowing the extra boost he could give to the defense. And if you've already played an entire half and then you're already going against guys that are rotating and now they're bringing in a fresh guy. Oh, man, if you're that Stanford offensive line, what a nightmare. Awful. But on the subject of ejections, we got to talk about Oregon's own a little bit after a little kerfuffle there. I know a lot of people were discussing, whether I don't think that gets imposed in the next game whatsoever, being that it was not a targeting call. I know there's a lot of talk about that online, but let's get into that. There was a lot of hotheads towards the, throughout this game. But just, you know, towards the end of that first half there, you kind of knew things were getting a little scrappy. And I don't know if, you know, the refs made the right call on who to eject, but I want to know what it looked like on TV, because I know I'm too biased, and my experience in the stadium was too murky to actually know it. What really led to him being ejected?
Well, we saw Seven McGee get ejected from that ball game for engaging in the kerfuffle, if you will, in the little skirmish that happened near the end of the half. As we know, it was a play where ball was dead. Stanford ended up picking it up. Whether or not they could return it or not, Bo Nix decided to jump in, ensure that it couldn't happen either way. Once he goes out of bounds toward the Oregon sideline, players come together, players get into it as they tend to when they come together, and McGee ended up being ejected. I will say, watching on TV, the one thing I saw that stuck out was it wasn't intentional, and I don't think it was what he wanted to do, but Seven McGee did push a player in the helmet in a way that if you're the ref who was standing behind him into an angle, it could absolutely look like a punch. It could. It was one of those, and if you're standing behind in a way, it does absolutely kind of look like you're punching at another player. Letter of the law, throw a punch, you're done. Those are just the rules. It's unfortunate. We saw his tweet afterwards where he said, "Hey, I was just shoving a guy, just defending my quarterback." Both things that I absolutely do believe you should be doing. You absolutely do protect your quarterback. You absolutely should be standing there. But there is some room to understand that we need to be willing to toughen up in those moments mentally as well as physically. And while it's unfortunate, I see where it was coming from. And it is something that I don't believe it carries over into this week. I hope it doesn't, because McGee is an absolutely outstanding player and he is an absolutely dynamic player, the kind of guy you want to have on the field for Oregon.
Yeah, and even, you know, got to see Hudson really step up, and we have a bunch of, it's impressive how many speed guys we have at that position and our offense especially. But yeah, it was unfortunate. I felt, you know, from my perspective, obviously being a biased Oregon fan there, felt like, you know, Stanford doing a little too much extra on the sideline, especially looked like Bo lost his helmet on that play. And it was like, yeah, you got to get the hell out of there and expect on the other team's sideline. You're going to cause problems if you're going to linger. So, you know, Stanford knew what they had coming, and hey, that was, you know, at least the most that they were able to contest against what we were trying to do in the first half. So even with the referees and everything else going on in the first half, that was probably the most, their biggest play of the game in the first half. So, you know, I understand them getting a little fired up, and you know, yeah, just wish it didn't result in a player having a missed time. I hate that the most about any kind of call, but as you said, you know, even most people can understand our Pac-12 referees in this case. If you're in that perspective and you're seeing it happen, you got to call it.
Well, Nick, speaking of Pac-12 referees, we do have somebody coming on today who does have a little bit of experience and works pretty closely with those people, you could say.
Yeah, that's a great time to introduce our next guest, Once a Duck this week. We wanted somebody that had some experience playing the Arizona Wildcats and had plenty to talk about. I think we got one. Former Oregon safety, Juwan Williams. This week, we definitely had to have a guest that was there for a lot of those important battles against Arizona. But first, I want to ask Juwan Williams, former safety of the Oregon Ducks, what's it take to get a guy like you from the other side of the country in Georgia to come out to the University of Oregon, not just for your playing career, but for a long time after?
Oh, man. It didn't take too much, you know. Me and my cousins were big fans, especially during the Dennis Dixon era, and partial to when Chip got there and all the things he was doing in that offense. We would catch it probably, you know, afternoon, probably like around 3 or 4 when y'all had your those afternoon games. But we were amazed. So once Coach Neil came calling, and then I got on the phone with Chip, it was a done deal, you know. But of course, Mom wasn't too happy about going across 3,000 miles across the country. But once she and I visited Eugene, she saw how great the people were. She met DP, Coach Cam, and the staff over there. She was pretty relieved that I would be in good hands. And then, you know, the weather is much better on the West Coast. You know, the humidity isn't as bad, and then there aren't as many bugs. So I try to get my family to come out west as much as I can.
Juwan, you were at the University of Oregon for a stretch of time that I think is really important to look at for a few reasons. We're going to get into those important Arizona matchups we mentioned in a moment, but you were able to see the program hit some huge heights, then have some lulls, and then you were able to see the rebuilding process that has gotten Oregon to where it is now. Just tell us a little bit what it was like seeing Oregon go through those different shades, those different layers, and tell us your takeaway from kind of seeing how it all evolved.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was a whirlwind of emotion, and just being in it, you didn't really understand it too much. But when I finally removed myself and saw the business side of it, you definitely can understand it. Yeah, I would say first couple years when you lose Nick Aliotti as a DC, and then you see a tenured staff leave the school, it's like, wow, you're amazed, you're shocked. And all a little upset just because those guys were there for so many years. Like DP was a pillar in the community. And then, you know, you bring in some new blood. You're kind of weary of the new blood just because, you know, of how everything else went. But Coach Taggart, Coach Cristobal definitely brought a new energy, a new a physicalness, a new way of training, a new way of being a football school. And they ultimately, you know, brought that in, that came, you know, a global, recruiting structure like we haven't seen before, or have we seen in other schools. So it was incredible. You know, you get, more and more kids from the South or the East, each and every year. So that was great to see. But then you also got the speed from Florida. You got the physical size and nature from the East Coast and the South, Texas. And you just bring them all to Eugene, Oregon. You know, Eugene was an interesting place for all of us to be there. And then you see what Dan Lanning is bringing from a defensive side of the ball. You know, it was more for lack of better words, it was an offensive school for a while. You know, we would run and score up, and then you just hope defense gets a couple stops and we'll take it from there. But yeah, it was incredible to see a lot of great men walk through those halls and those doors from the University of Oregon, from being with Marcus and how his maturation went to be seeing Justin for 3-4 years and how he's doing. It was just incredible to see those guys and everyone in between, Big Play VA, and the excitement he had every Saturday when he played, and then just the wild rides, the Michigan State game in 2014, then going to their house in 2015. It was incredible. It was awesome. And then, you know, you just see the business side of it. You know, I feel like our AD Rob Mullins has done a great job rebuilding it, making sure he gets the right person. You know, I feel like we were spoiled a lot from that staff that had 20 plus years in the business and 20 plus years in Eugene. And then now you see Rob wants to recreate it. But in his own way, hopefully Dan Lanning's here to stay for a while, and we'll get that magic back.
Yeah, and when you first came in, there was a coaching change, but a lot of those staff members that had been there for, you know, 30 plus years, they remained intact. And you redshirted your first year, but you became a major contributor in your first playing year on special teams and in the secondary. On what was a very, very special year that, you know, ended up being a part of the first playoff win in college football history, Oregon's first Heisman. What was that season like for you, and what do you remember most from it?
The season was magical. I mean, I feel like that season alone is probably one of the most memorable ones. I feel like I can go down a line of either events, games that I can recall, just, you know, off the top of my head. That season alone was magical. You felt it going in. You know, we lose from a defensive side standpoint. You lose Aliotti. You lose BJ Brandon Jackson. You lose Avery Patterson in the back end, but you still have Eric Darvin. You still have Ifo Ekpeolomu. Then you have Reggie Daniels on the other side. You have Troy Hill, who are guys who had a lot of playing time but haven't had that start yet. So you see the maturation of them. And then you see Don Pelham ascend to defensive coordinator position. And then he is a family man. So it was incredible to see him galvanize the defense, bring us all together. It was important just because, you know, you would have the D-line talking to the outside linebackers. You have the linebackers talking to the safety so that we're all on one accord. And then just you go on that run, it's like, okay, we know in conference who we have to beat. We have to beat Stanford. We have to handle our business there. But at first it was non-conference. We had to get through Michigan State. We handle business in non-conference. We go into conference play. We're doing pretty well, you know. Then we run into, you know, as I'm sure we'll get into, we'll run into Rich Rod and his offense. And then, you know, we go on a load with that. That's a hiccup in the season, but then we go on another run. Then you get to the Pac-12 championship game where it's a revenge game. And then from there on, it's the best story anyone could write. You have Marcus going for his Heisman. You hope that he gets it. Then we ride off into the sunset at the Rose Bowl, where you go against another Heisman winner in Jameson. All his match that he's going, that's happening. And then it's a storytelled ending to that Rose Bowl. And then, you know, you get a week off and you're faced with Ohio State. That season alone was magical. Definitely didn't end the way anybody wanted it to. But those 125, 130 guys definitely have a story to tell for the rest of our lives.
Well, Juwan, you mentioned it, so we got to get into it. Rich Rod, his offense, Arizona, that team that year. I love that 2014 season because it really does have that redemption factor, especially against Arizona. They come in and get a win on a Thursday night in Eugene, but the Pac-12 championship rolls around. You get that matchup again with Arizona. Going into that ball game, was that the matchup you guys wanted? Did you want to be able to right that ship? And then once you hit the field and the dominance ensued, what was that locker room like? What was that sideline like? What was it like knowing that it was accomplished?
Oh, man, we definitely wanted it. You could, once the other side, the South, figured itself out, we're like, all right, cool. All right, we got what we wanted. It was as the coaches like to say, it was another game. But to the players, like, no, we dropped this ball back in October in the infamous pink uniforms, pink helmets that I'm sure, you know, Kenny won't let us let the team wear anymore. But yeah, it was definitely what we needed. And it was just a better game plan from us from a defensive standpoint. You know, when you're dealing with Rich Rod, it's you have all three levels. You have the defensive line at the time of running a 3-4. So you have to, you know, as a D line, you got some stout D linemen, but it's double A, it's DeForest Buckner, and it's Balducci in the middle, like holding up for the run. However, you know, now it's us on the back end holding up for the pass, and then you have a new Solomon, who was a great quarterback for him at the time and that year, just running a triple option offense. So, you know, you have to hold up on all three phases of the game there. But yeah, it was magical that night. And then it being in the 49ers stadium in Santa Clara. So it was incredible to be there. But yeah, once the game got underway, it was like, okay, you feel like it's in the air. You can feel it. It just has to just go our way. And once it started going our way, the offense started to pick up. You saw amazing plays from Darren Carrington. You saw plays from Byron Marshall, Thomas Tyner, and Marcus, of course. You got the big, the long ball to Devin Allen. And it's like, oh, you know, you look up, we're up. I want to say it's like 35-0 at half. But, oh, okay, we can come away with this easily. And then, you know, you just, as the coach says, it's a second half game. They come out, I believe they score, like, oh, they're still in this. You know, you never want to count Rich Rod and that team out. But as soon as the clock hit quadruple zeros, it was pandemonium. It was like, all right, hey guys, this is a championship, this is a Pac-12 championship. A lot of the guys on that team had won one when they were young, but not one when they were old. So it was great to get the seniors and the vets back on that stage. And then we got the news at that time. It was like, hey, we're going to the Rose Bowl. And, you know, we already knew with the contract, the Pac-12 championship would go to the Rose Bowl. But now it being in the CFP, you don't really know what to think. And he was like, all right, we're at the Rose Bowl. Then the rankings come out. We have Florida State, and we go off from there.
Man. And on the topic of rebounds, you know, and coming back against Arizona later that season, you guys had to rebound really hard after the 2016 season. And one of the things I'm most amazed by with the turnover of the coaching staff is the guys like Terrell Crosby, Royce Freeman, that leadership group that really stuck around, and yourself being part of that. What was it like to see the guys that stuck around and assumed leadership roles and help maintain, you know, the core group of guys that would lead us into that first season with Coach Taggart and beyond?
It was crazy and also interesting. You know, it was a time where we didn't know what was happening. We knew, hey, Rob is going to get us a guy. He gives us Coach Taggart. And he's a guy from the South coming to Eugene. So it's like, okay, he's known Ball all of his life. He's studied under Harbaugh. He's played the position. So I was like, all right, we got a good guy. And we still have, he goes and gets Dakota Prukup from the FCS level. And then we have a young Justin Herbert as the quarterback. So like, okay, we have options. But as far as the leadership goes, it was incredible to see a quiet Royce go into his coming to his own. You have Terrell Crosby, as you said, who had already been a leader from his days as a freshman, throwing him out there, getting him in the fire. And then it was just, you know, you had a core group of guys who had to mix in with the new coaching staff and make sure that the Eugene that we love and that we care about still stayed the same. But we also had to integrate some new family members. You know, we had to make sure the Florida boys had a winter jacket in the winter when it got cold. We had to make sure they knew where to go, how to stay out of trouble. But then we also, you know, just had to get back into the community and make sure the community knew, hey, yeah, it may be new to you all, but we're still the same 125 guys you cheer for every Saturday.
Juwan, that 2017 season has a specific game, and it is, again, an Arizona game that felt really, really important. I would know because I was a freshman at the University of Oregon at that time. It was a huge ball game because it was Justin Herbert coming back from injury. It was a big kind of right the ship game after the middle of the season had gotten a little off the rails a bit. What do you remember from that ball game and that ball game leading into your guys' senior night? The end of that season was obviously a little bit chaotic, but what can you give us from those couple of games that just felt like you guys were building towards something?
Yeah, it was a rocky season to say the least. It was up and down. You saw glimpses of we can be good, and you saw glimpses of I don't know what this team is. I've never seen this amount of effort or this lack of effort out there. But when we put a young Justin Herbert out there against Washington and then he gets hurt and it's like, did they put him out there too soon? But he comes back. He's a fighter. He's a battler. And he's like, all right, we're going to go. We're going to rock with him. It was at that time, we're just like, hey, we got to – for the seniors that year, like, all right, we gotta get out there. We got to get a win. We got to galvanize this group. All we need to do, string together a good performance here or there, and clean up some stuff on special teams, and then we're solid. And then, you know, going into your senior night, you never want to lose on senior night. So it's like, all right, we have to win, you know. But yeah, it was an incredible ride. I don't remember too much about that night. I know I remember senior night because I definitely dropped a pick there. But other than that, I believe it was a great game. Always a good game, unless we go to Arizona, which we have this week. It's always something when we get there. But nonetheless, it was a great ride in 2017.
Yeah, and well, one of my favorite parts about my experience at the University of Oregon, I know Sam agrees, and we love talking about this with all our fellow SOJC graduates, but the University of Oregon and Alan Hall, what did it do to prepare you for life beyond football? And what were some of your favorite parts and classes? I'm always jealous, especially with Alan Hall, because I had to be in portables for like my last 2 years while they were building this fantastic building for all you guys that I walk through now. I'm like, man, if I would have had this, I would have been something.
No, absolutely. I mean, I miss it. Allen Hall, a lot of late nights. That's definitely what comes to mind. It's like, hey, you're getting out of Allen at probably like 8, 9 o'clock because you're working on a project, whether it's Gateway or you're in your coursework. But yeah, Allen Hall gave me a lot of intangibles that I didn't know I was going to need in this real world, you know, whether it was, you know, someone gives you a project without any guidelines. You're like, so you want something back that we can use. All right, cool. I've done this before. I've definitely looked at a couple instructors. Like, so you just want me to go off on a rail and do it. But other than that, it was a lot of memories with Dan Morrison, Deb Morrison, Rebecca Force. Just a lot of the core folks that are still there to this day. Callie Matthews. And just, you know, when Callie came to our freshman class, she did the whole like Twitter stalk on a couple of us. And that was when like it really opened my eyes to the whole social media lens. And then, you know, you go into the week course in the summer where you have to produce probably like 3 or 4 projects in the span of 6 days and make it all happen. That was my first introduction to journalism. And that's when I fell in love with it. It was like, wow, I can tell stories that may not be told or get the behind the scenes look or, you know, someone's story that's never been told before and inspires a generation. We did a piece on Kenny and we learned so much about him and how he works with different athletes outside of football and as well as outside of Eugene. It was just amazing to see, get that look into and then just presenting it. That was the toughest part. It was like, okay, now we have to go in front of Deb, Dan, Rebecca, and present this like we're about to, you know, pitch it to a company. Like, okay, you get the lens, you just get that real world work. And yeah, that's what the School of Journalism is all about. I feel like it's up there, probably top two and not number two in journalism schools, just because of they give you the keys to go make your dreams happen. And then, you know, I would say my best memory is heckling Dan Morrison in class because everyone was afraid of him for some reason. I sat in the second row and every time he said something, I always have a side comment or a joke to say to him. And people would stare like, you're not scared of this 6'4" large man? Like, no, he's the best guy ever. I go into his office afterwards. We have a great laugh. But yeah, they definitely prepared me for life after. And as well as for during, you know, you would see so many classmates on Duck TV at practice or for press conferences. So it was a great experience I had at Allen.
Well, I know that Nick and I can both absolutely agree at the statement that Dan Morrison's absolutely the man, and we will 100% stand by that forever and ever. Juwan, before we get you out of here, we don't want to take up too much of your time this afternoon. Nick knows what I'm about to ask. It's a joke at this point that I ask it so often, but you did play at Oregon during some pretty fantastic uniform years. There's no doubt about that. Whether it was like the military look when you were a freshman, the carbon and like fading helmets against Michigan State, those black and pinks, or even later in your career when like the ducks on the shoulders and everything. Was there a specific look that you thought was the absolute best, or what was one that really grabbed you?
I would definitely say either breast cancer uniforms, either the pink helmet or the black with pink numbers that grabbed me. And then also it was the Coach Rad uniform that we had. Like I had to get that one just because like if you were there during that time, Coach Rad is a pillar, still is a pillar. And then, you know, all the great times we had with him in the summer. It was just like, oh no, like one, I gotta get him to sign it. Whenever I see Coach Rad, I gotta have it with me, have him sign it for me.
Oh, and really quickly before Nick jumps in, I will say for anyone that's not aware on the podcast, 2016 UC Davis, all gray with the blue collars, the Coach Rad jersey. It's an absolutely beautiful one. And also Juwan, you might want to look out. I think black and pink might be coming back pretty soon. I think that might be pretty exciting.
Yeah. Rumor is UCLA week, right, Sam?
Yes, sir.
Should be a big matchup too. I'm excited for that. Well, before we let you go, I know Sam mentioned jokes, and usually the punchline around here is Pac-12 officiating. But instead, we got to talk to you in a serious capacity about it. What's it like being in the current role you're in? Tell the people about it, and you know, let us know what you're doing to improve the Pac-12 officiating out there, okay?
Absolutely. I've done your homework. So I am the coordinator for football officiating as well as sport management at the Pac-12 conference. It's interesting, man. Every day is a different day, whether it's football officiating, basketball officiating, baseball, softball, soccer, you name it. We're getting hit up by all sides for officiating. But, yeah, officiating is a wild endeavor, especially for the gentlemen and women that endure it. I've grown to have an appreciation for these people. It's definitely a way to stay connected, stay close to the game, and as well as learn the other side of the game. And then, you know, being a former player, you're like my boss will always ask me, you know, so what's a day-to-day like for a student athlete? How are you learning the tricks of the trade, or how are you learning to get around the rules? And I tell them, I'm like, oh, you know, you give us the rule, we're looking for the loophole. You know, I'll give the example of, you know, when it's a DPI, and you know, as a DB, we're taught to, you know, we're going to pull the hip. We're going to pull the hip until you throw a flag. And if you throw a flag, we're like, okay, what can I do to not, one, get beaten, and two, not have this flag on us? But yeah, it's a week-to-week thing. You know, every game won't be perfect, but we're trying to be perfect out there. And all we're trying to do is not have a catastrophic call or, you know, disrupt the game in any way. And we're just trying to get the best 10 out there on the field, and we know any game that we go into, we're not going to win because one side is going to be mad at us. But as long as we officiate the games correctly, and we can go home with a smile on our face.
Well, Juwan, I'm officially apologizing now for all the Duck fans that are going to hit you at the minute that something goes wrong in any of these games. I'm sure it's going to be rabid and rampant, and I'm officially apologizing for myself and apologizing for Nick blowing up your spot right there.
It's all good. I'll leave a landline open for Nick. He can call. We can talk it out a little bit.
Hey, always redirect him to me, buddy. I'll set him straight. But hey, appreciate that perspective. Appreciate you giving us your time. And thanks, man. Appreciate great interview. And once a Duck, always a Duck.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Go Ducks. All right, man. What a great interview. We've got a streak going. Don't want to jinx it for sure, but so is this team. And make sure you guys go and hit Juwan with a follow at J-Wan17, J-W-A-A-N-17. Make sure you're following him. And hey, don't go to him for your Pac-12 referee complaints, okay? We're going to clean that up this week. We're going into Arizona. And hey, we asked you guys on Twitter what you wanted to see. And that was a consistent theme for sure. I think it was pretty well summarized by many of you, but one I saw at RobFZ450, self-discipline. That should clear all the red zone flags and little things that are popping up. Hashtag go Ducks. And I couldn't agree more. I think a lot of that is discipline, and I think Coach Lanning has addressed that with the team, but we won't know until we see it, and it's especially tough to see that come out on the road, especially at one of the Arizona schools.
You know, Nick, the first tweet I was going to go to, it's very similar and it covers the same kind of stuff. It's from Claudia Dean at Claudia Faye. No self-inflicted wounds of any kind. That includes penalties. That includes getting hot-headed in strange moments. It really means just playing Oregon football and beating Oregon the best you can every week. I could not agree with her more. She put the hashtag Go Ducks on there. Couldn't agree with more of that either.
Yep, saw a lot of consistencies through a lot of those responses. Very, very much so. The Oregon Ducks fans want to see less penalties, and I think they, you know that if we continue to play with less mistakes, less penalties, more focus in the second half defensively, it's going to be a really, really fun game, even all the way out in Arizona. Which brings me to my next C. Frostland, Chad Frostland. As someone who lives in Arizona now, it's my one game this year. I have endured nastiness by UA fans. I would like to just not have to worry about that by halftime. They cheered for Dixon's injury. Oh, 07. They threw debris after the Mazzoli win in 2009. Was there, can confirm. They are not nice. And not only that, it's one of the toughest locker rooms. You got to walk all the way by their fans, go into this little tiny shack in the corner. And that's where you got to keep your helmet on because they can definitely throw things at you right there. So hope he enjoys the game. And just like he said, I hope by halftime, most of them are filing out of there and the Ducks fans are the ones making the most noise.
I couldn't agree with you more there. Another one from B. Wilford at 78 DB dub, tackling in space. Absolutely. No matter what team, when we're talking about it, if you can tackle in space, you're doing a lot of things well. I think guys like Bennett Williams have done a great job of that this season so far, but I really do agree. We need to see that out of everybody across the board, tackling in space. A big thing I want to see going into this game at Arizona.
Gotta love when B. Wilford crosses the timeline, that's for sure. One thing I was surprised to see that stood out, Quack to Quack, which is at Eric Stamness, said he wants to see a blowout for once. I'm kind of thinking maybe there's context there. Maybe he means on the road, but I don't know. How do you define, you know, I think we've seen a couple of them already this season, but hey, I'm always for more. I can't disagree. I would like to see more blowouts. That's for sure. And this Arizona team, while improving, certainly over the years, is of a caliber, I think, in recruiting that we definitely have the talent to potentially blow them out.
Well, and I'll give him a little bit of credit. I think if I believe correctly, the way we worded the question was, what do you want to see improved in Arizona? I don't remember the last time Oregon got a good blowout win down in Tucson. So I agree. I would love to see that. The last one I got from you, from Alex Cornell at Big Duck Energy with two Y's, defensive takeaways. I completely agree. We saw the fumble recovery and return from Sewell this past weekend, but beyond that, no interceptions were able to be grabbed by the Ducks. Two the week before, but two that Oregon, I don't want to call it luck because it takes training, it takes skill, it takes preparation to be in those moments, but they were moments that Oregon was very lucky to be able to have. I would love to see some turnovers as well. This Arizona team, they're capable of turning it over. I would love to see Oregon do that.
Yeah, agreed. Well, something that I don't think enough people mentioned is what I really want to see is establishing the run game. I don't want to see too much put on Bo Nix in this game. I feel like that's been something that, you know, for better or for worse, Bo has been a standout in the past couple of games. But I would really like to just see us absolutely go into their place, establish the running game, because as we saw, you know, this team, like one of the perfect examples, I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, when Cal played Arizona, it was absolute kind of dominance. And it felt mostly like that's kind of the key to wearing this team down, because especially if you're able to establish the running game, you aren't allowing this quarterback and these wide receivers to be on the field to make big explosive plays as often. And if we can see us just establish control in this game, really put our foot down, I think we could see something very similar to the first half of the Stanford game, even on the road.
Well, I think that Oregon can absolutely run the ball against this Arizona team. Arizona, they gave up 154 yards rushing last week to a Colorado team that I think everybody can agree is probably going to come in last place in the Pac-12 North or South. But the week before that, playing against Cal, another team that I don't think anyone would accuse of being at the absolute top of the Pac-12 table, they gave up 354 yards rushing. 354. Yes, 274 was Jay Knott, just an incredible player who can put up those kind of numbers. But Oregon, they've got talent as well. Bucky Irving, would love to see another triple-digit game from him. Would love to see Whittington get moving. Hopefully Nix doesn't have to, but I'm sure he could if he wanted to. And if he's healthy, if he's ready to go, could love to see Byron Cardwell back in there as well. Dollars has been contributing. Jordan James has been contributing. This Oregon run game could be really, really productive against Arizona.
Can even find ways to get the tight end, you know, in the RPO and in the run game. We've had some ways to get the tight end the ball that's a little different than outside of just the standard passing game too, which is fun to see. And we've continued to see new wrinkles thrown in each week. This should be no different. I think ultimately, you know, besides the X's and O's and the players on the field, one of the hardest things about any of the Arizona, you know, trips is getting down there, and they're usually, because of the heat, evening games. This will be a 6 p.m. Pacific kickoff, and it's tough to adjust. At least we've already come off an even later game, but it's tough going on the road and doing that because you're in the hotel all day. The way you manage your time is very, very important. How much you're staying hydrated, staying mentally focused, kind of envisioning what you're going to go out there and do on the field. It's all really important. I don't think people emphasize it enough. And then once you're there, we've talked about it enough, you know, the hostile crowds, man, they are one of the most underrated fan bases and toughest places to play, because you know, the Zona Zoo, once they get going, man, that student section is wild. Tucson, I know I've got a lot of family out there. They like to party quite a bit, and as we've seen in the 2009 game, if it gets close, they'll be rushing the field before the game's even over. So if you give them that opportunity, it can be a really, really tough place to play. So that's why I'd want to see them just come out. Like I remember us doing very, very well in the 2011 season and going out there and just kind of executing what we wanted in the run game to establish everything we wanted to get to the ball to our great wide receivers and tight ends when we needed to. And I imagine this Oregon team doing much of the same.
Well, all time, this is a very back and forth series between Oregon and Arizona. Currently, Oregon leads it 28 games to 17 games, but that's not to say that it hasn't been very back and forth. As we know, Oregon is currently a 2-game win streak in this series, but take that for what you will. These teams are always competitive, always a tough matchup, and we've spoken about it on this podcast before. We both understand how difficult it is for Pacific Northwest teams to make that trip down to the Arizonas. The flight, the weather, the fans, all of it difficult. This Oregon team, they absolutely do have some serious weight on their shoulders this week, and hopefully they should be able to deal with it, should be able to deal with this Arizona team. It is a team that has firepower, though. This team has Jaden Delora as their quarterback, the transfer from Washington State. He is capable of just catching fire at any moment. Is he streaky? Absolutely. But if you get on the wrong side of that streak, you've got a problem.
Well, and it's going to be huge to keep his streakiness down. It's going to be Gonzo on the number one wide receiver for the most part. That's a matchup that's going to be key to watch, seeing one of the most elite defensive backs in the Pac-12 from last year and this year going against one of the most explosive stars. And you know, Arizona finds ways to utilize their wide receivers always, especially, really, really impressed with, again, Delora being able to just kind of step in as a transfer, a lot like our own guy over here, and really just pick up the offense and take off with it.
Well, and for Arizona, they've got a pair of receivers that are super, super talented. They've got both Crowing and Singer, who are really, really talented players. In this last game against Colorado, Crowing had 180 yards receiving as well as a touchdown. Singer, 163 and a touchdown. In the matchup before that, Crowing had 133. Singer had 103. Both guys who in back-to-back weeks have had 100-yard receiving games. That in and of itself is impressive. To have two players have back-to-back weeks of over 100 yards receiving, really, really impressive stuff from the two of them. We know Delora loves to be able to get the ball out, loves to be able to move that thing downfield, and it's definitely going to be happening. Oregon's got to be prepared for it.
Yeah, and we have to really be able to tackle well in space with this offense. That's something that's caused Oregon concerns this season. And, you know, you got to be able to finish. And one of the best ways to do that, and a good way to tell if your team is going to be successful in eliminating broken tackles and big plays, is how many guys are around the football when the ball carrier goes down. And we've seen Oregon go up and down in this department. Sometimes they're really, really good about it. Other times it's been pretty sloppy. And it's going to be really, really important for that travel group that goes on the road to be able to finish tackles, finish plays, and not give second opportunities, especially when you have an easy play to make in the backfield. And, whether it's a slip, whether you get juked, just not being able to follow it up because guys stop pursuing the football. That's one of the most difficult things to see as a player or coach, and especially as a fan, is when you know you could have made a play in the backfield and it's just like, oh, that first guy missed, but everybody else stopped. Can't see that on the road. Everybody has to be bringing their energy, all 11 guys that are on the field, both sides of the football, to be honest. And as always on the road, you gotta secure the football. You know, a lot of people have warned us from the Auburn fan base of be on the lookout for Bad Bo, and I think we saw a little bit of it in the Georgia game, but he's got to be very, very on point, continue to not give any opportunities for the football to be given away, and be smart. That's one of the things he's done really, really good in the past couple games, is if it's not there, don't force it, throw it away, get what you can, get out of bounds. And he's been really, really smart about that. If he can continue to do that, I feel great about our chances on the road.
Well, this Arizona Wildcat team they've had two straight weeks, I should say, without being able to have an interception. Weren't able to get a pick at Cal, weren't able to get one against Colorado. I think that means two things. Number one, they haven't been there in coverage, but also number two, they're going to be hungry coming into this ballgame. It's going to be the second true road game for Bo Nix with the Ducks. Third, we know third really, but second true road game. three picks so far in those two-ish road games they've had so far. Really hoping we see that cleaned up this week. I think that last week was a huge confidence booster for Knicks, for the entire Oregon offense to be able to say what they could do in about 2.5, 3 quarters. Really impressive work from them. Hopefully they're able to continue to play clean, play some straight lace football. If so, Oregon's able to win this ball game.
Yeah. Well, I think it's about time we talk about just how much we think they're going to win that ball game by. I know I've kind of sat here and thought the last couple of weeks, you know, we've been pretty close in our predictions, but I think this is finally the week, Sam. One of us is bound to get this one right. Somebody's going to nail it. Somebody that follows Once a Duck is subscribed on whatever podcasting platform, hopefully all of them. And somebody's going to use our prediction. Somebody's going to win some big money. I can already feel it. So make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you're sharing with your fellow Ducks out there. And again, if you want to know, you know, any particular questions from us or want to suggest a guest, hit the comments, let us know on Twitter, reply. We'll definitely always take in the best responses. And again, comments, you're going to get the highest priority if you go and comment on YouTube, because man, those help drive the algorithm a little bit more in our favor. And that's the best way to get your participation noted right here on this channel while we talk about it on the podcast. So while I'm done stalling, I guess I have to have a prediction now. I still think we have to see a lot of maturity out of this team in the second half. Until then, I can't predict a full-on blowout. I think we might have a score at the end of this game that looks a little bit like a bit of Pac-12 after dark madness, and maybe the stat sheet might reflect that the same way. But I think the Duckies are going to come out 53-41. I think there's going to be some weird moments in probably the second half of this game, but I imagine the Ducks are going to come out, establish the run game, be able to be more physical, use that kind of 7-man rotation up front in the offensive line to make sure that we don't have to rely too much in the passing game, and go out there and when it's noisy, just push them for 5 yards at least every play, and a couple explosive plays here and there. And I think it'll be a tough, tough matchup for Arizona in the first half. And I just, until I see this team not let up in the second half, I can't believe that the other team isn't going to find some way to score some points. So I just think it's going to be one of those kind of games. I think we are going to get a big lead sometime in the second or third quarter, but got to see us put the pedal on the gas and throughout, especially defensively, for me to drop the score any lower than, you know, I think this offense, Arizona could be held, but I don't think they're going to be held under 3 scores.
Well, Nick, you know, I'm furious because last week I was a garbage time touchdown away from nailing that score. A garbage time touchdown away from nailing that score. So I'm not going to make the same mistake again. I'm going to account for the garbage time score. I really am in this ballgame. I think that Oregon is able to definitely put up points in this one. It's always hard playing at Arizona for sure, 100%. I'm going to go final score 48-31 Oregon. I think that this is probably the best defense Arizona's had to deal with so far this season. I think that it's definitely they're going to have to pressure DeLore. They're going to have to keep him in the pocket. But if they're able to do that, it'll be very, very difficult for them to get going. Arizona will probably score more in that second half. I think that Oregon's lead at halftime will be like most likely far greater than it is at the end of the ballgame. But feels right. Camden Lewis knocks in a couple extra ones again, 48-31. Oregon's going to get the win.
Well, and like I said, one of us has got to get the win this week. I'm telling you, somebody go out there, put some money on it, pick me or Sam, and then don't blame us afterwards when you're wrong with both. You've been warned here first, but hey, I'm excited for this game. I know I'll be watching from home this week, which sucks. And then we'll have a little bit of a bye week. We have to figure out what we're going to be doing for that. I'm excited. We've got a couple guest options I know we've talked about. But let us know who you want to see. And or maybe you just want to hear us drone on and on for what's going on in the bye week. Maybe somebody suggests we do a live event and include some of our fans. I don't know. Maybe you guys just need to actually let us know in the comments and hit us up because, man, lots of options. I know it's been a great season so far. We've had a lot of great guests, and we're going to bring a lot more to you because once a duck, always a duck. Go Ducks.